Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we will focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Ampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 21. Before we start, we'd like to share a smart habit hack from our listeners. As a follow-up to episode 19 on delineating your workday, we asked our listeners to share the last thing they do before ending their workday, kind of as a turn off work and get ready for personal time away from their desks. Here are some answers we received from our Instagram followers. Turn off the computer, create a to-do list for the next day, backup files, write in a journal, tidy up the desk, and close the computer and say, that's it for today.
It was so nice to hear from everybody on Instagram about what they like to do to end their workday. I especially like the last one, saying closing the computer or shutting down the computer and saying, that's it for today.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a nice like mental cue to say, all right, I'm switching things off. But I don't know, I've been using, you know, everybody knows I like the full focus planner. So what I like to do is I like to do what's called the workday shutdown ritual. And if you're not familiar with the full focus planner, there's a section for each day, workday shutdown ritual, that you can go through sort of as a, it's a set of habits, I guess you could say, but it's certainly a ritual in the sense of it's something you do every day to say, okay, I'm wrapping everything up, tying it with a bow, and it will be ready for me tomorrow. So everybody's, you know, workday shutdown ritual will look different. But for me, it's usually something like looking at my emails and making sure I've answered everything that absolutely needs to be answered that day, looking at my list of tasks for tomorrow and seeing like what order I need to do things in or what needs to be done in the morning and what needs to be done maybe in the afternoon or things like that. So it's not very complex, but it is something that really makes me feel more ready for the next day and say, okay, I can now walk away from all of this and have my own personal time. So,
yeah, I agree with that. I spend the last few minutes, like maybe 10, 15 minutes at the end of the workday, just clearing up my inbox a little bit, like getting rid of the emails that I don't need or I have handled, and then updating my Asana workspace, the project board with my personal and professional tasks, and just using a post-it note or my planner to write down the very short list these days, at least, of things I need to handle the next day. And, you know, I recently learned that the full focus planner came out in a pocket-sized version. I need a new planner anyway. So instead of ordering the full-sized one, I ordered the new full focus pocket planner. So it is considerably smaller than the regular size, at least what I'm seeing from the like dimensions and the picture. But it follows the same structure. It's just in a condensed format, which I think will work perfectly for me right now, you know, with the summer in full swing and the kids still at home. And I also couldn't resist ordering a kid's version of the full focus planner for my daughter. She's 7.5 years old and she is surprisingly extremely organized and loves journaling and making lists. So I think she will enjoy filling out her planner together with me every day, just creating this routine together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ritual. Yeah. I actually have a friend who does that with her daughters and it's something that they do together every day. I think maybe right after breakfast or during breakfast, mm-hmm. and they really enjoy doing that. Yeah, it's very interesting what a good habit it is to kind of take a look at your day and see what your priorities are. Mm-hmm. I agree. So in today's episode, we wanted to talk about dealing with burnout. And as freelancers, most of us have to deal with some degree of burnout, depending sometimes on a certain season of life that we're in or, you know, busier seasons of the year with our work or, you know, certain aspects of our home life that may be overlapping into our work time and things like that. It can just, you know, it can be difficult to handle this as freelancers. So, you know, we work remotely, but that means that we don't have colleagues nearby that we can vent to or that we can have a quick work break with. And while we all work flexible hours, even though we work for ourselves, it means that we can easily choose to work extended hours or devote evenings and weekends to work. You know, we're trying to achieve our financial goals while being constantly reminded about the need to market ourselves, develop professionally, stay up to date with relevant tools and resources, understand our clients better, run a full business operation, most of the time with only just one staff member, and the list could keep going on and on. And with the current situation with the COVID-19 pandemic, this adds a whole nother, you know, set of factors to the equation. So for many people, it means having had some loss of business, some financial security has been lost. A lot of people are or were homeschooling their kids for several months. It means co-working with family members that you may not be used to working with, and, you know, many other things that go along with this, not just to mention, I mean, these are just factors that could be related to work, but there's also the fact that you could get sick.
Yeah.
So that's the other piece of that whole thing with the pandemic. But just talking about all of these things can really just even make you feel anxiety or overwhelm. We've all been there when it comes to feeling, you know, close to or feeling some burnout. I know that we talked with Matt Baird in a previous episode about how he got to the point where he was feeling burnout. And that's why he made the switch to a 4-day work week. So we can link to that in our show notes as well.
Yeah.
But in getting ready for today's episode, I was thinking about the fact that we live in a culture that celebrates busyness, but that doesn't mean that we have to give in to this culture, right? I mean, at least in the United States, I'm kind of speaking for the United States here, but I think a lot of people do live in a culture that promotes and celebrates being busy. And so, you know, this stress that we get from society means that we feel like we have to do things perfectly. But on the other side of that, we accept this stress that our society puts on us. So there's two sides to it. Yes, there is this, you know, influence from society, but also we're accepting that if we decide to take that on. And this can cause things like chronic stress. There's actually a diagnostic code for anybody who's like me, like a medical translator or a life sciences translator. There is a diagnostic code for burnout, actually. So yeah, and I looked it up because I wanted to share this, but burnout as defined in ICD-11, that's the International Classification of Diseases code, it says that burnout is a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. It's characterized by three dimensions: feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion, increased mental distance from one's jobs or feelings of negativism or cynicism related to one's job, and reduced professional efficacy. Burnout refers specifically to phenomena in the occupational context and should not be applied to describe experiences in other areas of life. So, I mean, that kind of goes with what we're talking about today, right? We're specifically talking about burnout related to work, but as freelancers, a lot of our personal life overlaps with our work, especially because many of us work from home. So yeah, I just was thinking about that today and I thought this is, you know, a really good topic, probably not just for pandemic times. But for any time. So what do you think, Veronica?
Yeah, I didn't know that there was a code for this, but it's really eye-opening. I definitely think that the current situation is very draining and can definitely contribute to burnout. We live in such a fast-paced society that it's hard to accept our current reality and the fact that we sort of are forced to stand still and are not able to plan ahead as much as we'd like to, just due to all these factors that we're all facing right now. And it's natural to want to come back to the way things were and just feel the sense of achievement and stay busy as much as possible. And, you know, being freelancers, you're on your own, like you're your own boss. So you're in charge of your business and what happens to it. So you naturally want to succeed and you want to do more and do better. And I think that if some of our listeners right now like shrug their shoulders and wonder, what are you all talking about burnout? Mm-hmm. Like, I understand how you feel, because before I personally experienced burnout, I felt that same way myself. In my corporate job, I had colleagues who talked about burnout, about preventing burnout, or have experienced burnout themselves. And I had honestly no clue what they were talking about and how it was even possible. I really questioned how relevant all these discussions were, for me at least. And that happened until I experienced it myself. And now I'm a huge advocate for preventing burnout as an employee and as a freelancer. It really doesn't matter what your work situation is. Unfortunately, I experienced burnout myself twice, once as an employee and then as a freelancer. And I remember what a debilitating feeling it is. And it's one of the few things in life that I remember so vividly as if it happened yesterday. And I think it's a good thing, as much of, you know, a horrible thing that it is, it's a good thing to remember exactly how it feels, because then hopefully you're more likely to avoid getting there again or getting there in the first place. So I really think the important thing here is to know and recognize the symptoms of burnout. How do you feel when it starts happening to you? Mm-hmm. And sometimes a lot of these things are things that could also happen if something else is going on, like on your in your personal life or professional life or even health-wise. And also because we sometimes we just brush them off and think, you know, it's nothing. I'm just a little tired today, or I'm just not in the right mood, or I'm just a little busy. We just brush them off and we think that it's normal to feel this way, or that these symptoms will go away, or that they're related to something else. And the first and the most important one, I think, of them is just work aversion. As you mentioned, one of the things in that code, right? They were avoiding or postponing work, feeling unmotivated or becoming cynical about work, or hating some of the things that you used to love. And for me, this was the first sign that I noticed in both cases when I experienced burnout. Not my body sending me signals that it's had enough, you know, sadly. Though you'd think this would be the first thing to notice that you're not feeling well. That wasn't the case for me at all. Mm. I love work. And in both cases of my experience with burnout, what really alarmed me was that sudden realization that things that I used to love were bringing me despair and anxiety and turning me off and making me feel demotivated, just hating the very thought of doing the work that I knew I loved was like an alarm blaring in my head. You know, this is not right. Something's going on that's not right. And I'm saying sudden realization, but of course it was building up over time progressively. I just didn't notice it. And looking back, I can see how little things like new tasks coming up or ideas coming up from colleagues or supervisors or just things thrown at me, instead of inspiring me or at least making me like wonder, could I do this? Is this possible? Is it worth pursuing? My immediate knee-jerk reaction was like, nope. I don't want to do this. I don't want to touch it. I have too much going on. Like, I would come up with a long list of reasons why this is not going to work. And that eventually led to the sense of just work aversion. I don't want to deal with this.
Interesting. And you know, that's one thing I meant to clarify about this code, is that it's not considered a medical condition, but it is an occupational phenomenon. Mm-hmm. That's how it's described. And I think, you know, even though you mentioned working as an employee, you know, people asking you to do things and you were coming up with reasons why you couldn't, I think that as freelancers, we can easily do that too, whether it's a client that we used to enjoy working with and maybe no longer do. And sometimes that's related to also the client relationship that we, you know, maybe it's not as good as it used to be, of course.
Yeah.
It could be that. But, you know, things you used to love that now just seem like, oh, it's one more thing to add to my huge pile of things, or even things just working on them within our business. You know, I talk to a lot of people about working on their business, you know, on their marketing online and on their websites and things like that. And I can sense this feeling that they are so almost to the point of burnout in their work that this just feels like a mountain that they cannot overcome.
Right.
And so when you were describing that feeling of kind of things that you used to enjoy and you just no longer did, or this feeling of despair, I imagine that that's a pretty low feeling to feel like, how do I get out of this?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it just feels like something, yeah, like you said, it's just a mountain of stuff and it's just another thing that's added onto it and mm-hmm. it's just crushing you. Another thing that is a symptom of burnout, and I also had the misfortune of experiencing it, is avoiding social interaction. And again, something that for me, it happened gradually. It just felt like, oh, right now work is more important, or I have this deadline, or I just have to do this extra thing. Mm-hmm. And I can't go and meet my family, or I can't go and spend time with my friends, or, you know, I'm going to turn down this invitation, or break that promise I made to a close friend or family member, just because right now work is so important.
Yeah.
But over time, every time I chose work over social interaction and spending time with friends and family, it was a drop in that sort of tidal wave that eventually came after me. Mm-hmm. It's such a tricky balance because, yes, sometimes you have to spend extra time and effort and do the work, right? Especially as mm-hmm. a freelancer, you have to make these choices every day. But it's important to realize that social interaction also gives you the energy and is an outlet for you, right, to release pressure and to remember that you're a human being and you have a life, and not be, you know, overwhelmed with work, because eventually that's what triggers the sensation or the feeling of burnout. And, you know, another thing could be feeling fed up or hopeless. Like I can't continue like this anymore. This is not working out. You feel like you're in a corner and you just, there's no other way. You have to like drop everything and really rethink what's going on. Feeling inadequate, like you're failing, like whatever you do, it's not enough. Like you're drowning, something's crushing you. The inability to concentrate, the reduced productivity, feeling like what you do is not enough, like you're dealing with something bigger than yourself. And again, like this feeling of crush, like that's how I felt, like something was crushing me and it was not enough. Like no matter how many hours I put into it, I was not going to be able to do it properly. And mood swings, like you're happy and you're trying to stay optimistic and happy and positive, but you're just so tired. I think that's one of the key words in burnout, is just you're tired, and that's why the mood swings come and you just can't control them. And then of course the physical symptoms like headaches and body aches and fatigue and just a lot of other symptoms like indigestion. And it can be very individual and it can vary. And I can say that with my two experiences with burnout, the symptoms were somewhat similar and somewhat different. So the first time I had burnout, it was in my corporate job, and I was just oblivious to all of the initial signs and symptoms of what my body and my mind was trying to tell me, basically until the point that I got very sick. And I had all the symptoms of the flu, but I didn't have the flu. Like, it wasn't a diagnosis that the doctors have given. It was just extreme, like, you know, I was depleted. I was just so tired. And it was burnout. And then once I had the time to stay home, you know, be on sick leave and recover, then all the other symptoms show their ugly face. And I was feeling, you know, just hopeless and stuck in a corner and unable to go on anymore. And the second time around as a freelancer, I just felt crushed and drained. I had none of the physical symptoms. I just felt really, except feeling really, really tired. And feeling like strong aversion to work that I loved. I just wanted to be as far away as possible from work, like no matter if it was a big task or small, just because it felt like it was that one more thing, you know, being added to my pile of things to do. And I felt like I couldn't go on like this. So it was just a soul crushing feeling, but very mild physical symptoms. And having experienced both and remembering very vividly how I felt and how long it took me to recover in each case, I'm just scared of feeling that way again. I don't want this to happen anymore. And so I'm very conscious right now of doing everything I can to avoid burnout.
So the first time you said you took a sick leave because you're an employee. So what did you do as a freelancer? Because Most freelancers don't take sick leave, right?
Well, I actually did set an out of office message, and I took a month off. And at the time, I also taught a few courses at a local college for their translation program. And I contacted my supervisor, and I told her that, you know, I explained how I'm feeling and what's going on. And I just said that as soon as I finished teaching the class I was teaching at the time, I'm going to take some time off. And so I basically took 2 semesters off, just because I couldn't go on.
I remember this now.
Yes, I told you about it. Yeah.
I remember that.
And I reduced my volunteering activity dramatically, and I was not taking on any new clients. I really spent a long time just clearing up, like cleaning up my plate and seeing and reflecting on what led to the situation in the first place. What did I do for this to happen? And then making very conscious decisions and choices on how to not let it happen in the future. Because I knew I was going to continue freelancing, and I knew I loved the work. It's just that I did something wrong in the process that led to me feeling burnout.
Yeah, I think it's easy to do that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very easy to just, you know, put your head down and work, especially if you like to work like we do.
Yeah.
And not to think twice about it. And then by the time you realize it, it's caught up with you. You know, so let's talk about some ways to sort of deal with burnout or try to avoid burnout if you can. But let's talk first about, you know, if you've gotten to the point where you do feel that you are going to become burned out or you are burnt out. So I think the first one is just, like you said, to admit when you're feeling burned out and allow yourself to feel tired and overwhelmed. You know, sometimes, like I was saying at the beginning about this culture of busyness that we have, we don't even allow ourselves sometimes to feel tired, or we know we're tired, but then we say, but I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
I've been that person. I know.
Yeah.
So, and too often we try to convince ourselves it's normal to feel this way. It's normal to be stressed. It's normal to be busy. It's normal to, you know, fill in the blank. Right. But we shouldn't, feel like this all the time. And that's the thing is and I think everybody probably can get to that point where we feel busy, tired, stressed all the time, even if we don't recognize the stress. And I was talking to one of my copywriting clients about this once. I was writing a piece for her on stress, chronic stress. And she said, you know, we can sometimes get to the point where we're going all the time that we don't even realize we are stressed. And that I have experienced myself, and I know that for sure. I don't know if I would call it burnout, but I'm not, I mean, it could be, but it's, you know, something that I think we just don't even recognize sometimes. So just, you know, admitting when you feel like you're maybe reaching that point of depletion and allowing yourself to feel tired and overwhelmed, sort of sitting with it and saying, okay, what's going on here? This one's particularly hard for me, especially because I'm one of those people who likes to be productive, effective, busy, we'll say. But I also realized that, you know, I put a lot of that on myself. It's easy to say, well, you know, this person needs that, or this group or organization or client or whatever needs this from me. But we agree to all of these things. So
yes.
That's right. Part of it, you know, right there. There's that piece too. So, and then also just to take some time, like you did, to rest and recharge. And, you know, but not to the point where you're forced to take that month off, but to actually maybe work towards taking that time off. And when facing burnout, I think that's it. You know, the first step is to rest and do nothing, as much as we fear doing nothing. But it's actually really important for creativity and self-reflection to just sit with these things. And I heard somebody say this week that rest is productive. Rest is actually very productive.
Yeah.
But that's not the message we get. Right, in our society. So I think that that's something that we have to start rejecting, that message that we do get about this go, 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 busy, busy, busy all the time, and realize that rest is actually something worth scheduling into your week, right?
Yeah.
And so that's always something that I'm working on as well.
Yeah, you're right. It's such a crucial step, and it's may feel very counterintuitive, like that's not how we're brought up, and that's not what we're seeing, the examples we're seeing every day, and the messages we're getting from society and whoever we choose to be our role models. Like it goes against your instincts. Like I can't slow down. I can't stop. And you have like a million reasons why you can't afford to do that. Right.
You can always come up with more reasons.
But the thing is that if you are at the burnout phase, or if you're reaching the burnout phase, if you're chronically stressed or just feeling hopeless and depressed because of all of this leading to burnout, basically, you must stop, or else you're continuing to burn the candle at both ends. Like there's no other way to deal with it. You can't say, I'm just going to like slow down a little bit and then figure this out. You'd really just have to take some time to rest and figure it out without at least most of the commitments that have led you to this place. And it's only when you stop and while you recover that you can accept your own responsibility in what happened. It's not just the world against you and everyone else, you know, making you feel this way. As you said, there are certain things we're allowing to happen, whether consciously or subconsciously. And you have to accept your responsibility in what happened and think of how to fix this and how to avoid it from happening again. And I think as a follow-up to this, it's really important to be open about it and talk to others about what you're experiencing and what happened. Your family, your friends, your close colleagues, if you feel so inclined. This is not the time to try and deal with this on your own. In fact, chances are that reaching the burnout stage is at least in part due to the fact that you were avoiding social interaction or not having enough social interaction and being without your support system. And it's important to talk about this honestly with people who are close to you. In my case, mm-hmm. this was a very painful but necessary conversation in both cases that I experienced mm-hmm. burnout, because my colleagues and my friends and my family noticed some signs and symptoms before I did. And they were realizing what's happening and mm-hmm. sometimes even tried to talk to me about it. And I was oblivious to mm-hmm. this going on. And then after the fact, talking to them about it, just, you know, opening up and saying, yeah, I'm burnt out. I can't go on any longer. I really need to rethink and fix this. And having this open conversation with them helped me realize how I got there in the first place, what impact it had on the people that are close to me, maybe how it hurts them. And of course, it's not something I wanted to do. So it sort of painted mm-hmm. the picture for me of why I don't want this to happen again, not just for me, but also for the people who are dear to me. Plus, you get their support. You're not dealing with burnout all on your own anymore. And it's really important. It's a situation when there's no shame in asking for help or accepting help if people are offering it. Mm-hmm. And then the next important thing to do is to reflect on the reasons why you're experiencing burnout. And it seems like an easy thing to do, but it's really not, because you may come up with a few reasons. But I think it's important for every reason you come up with, digging deeper and asking yourself, but why this happened, or why mm-hmm. do you feel this way? To really try and get to the bottom of this. Like in my case, in that first situation when I experienced burnout in my corporate career, my first response was I was burnt out because I was working on a huge project. It was a big task with a lot of responsibility, and I had to deliver it in a short timeline. But why? Well, because I was working alone on this project. And why did this happen? Because I didn't ask for help, or I chose not to accept help. Why did this happen? So just keep asking this question, you know. I did some of this work on my own, and I did some of this work thanks to my wonderful colleagues and mentors that I had at the time, who recognized what was going on and were willing to talk to me about it and helped me dig deeper and find those root causes. You know, and for me, as I found out, the root cause was imposter syndrome and fear of delegating, just because I thought I'd do it better myself and I felt the need to prove myself. And that's why this whole thing unfolded. I didn't delegate, and I wanted to prove myself and show that I could do it. And I didn't want people to think that I wasn't capable of doing it myself. Mm-hmm. So whatever the reasons are for burnout, whether it's unreasonable deadlines, unreasonable clients, too much work, social or professional isolation, it's really important to dig deeper and ask these why questions until you stumble upon the root cause.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think with as freelancers, because this is a little bit different from what your employee situation is, but as freelancers too, I think if I've ever reached a point of burnout, and probably I have in a few different ways, but I mean, the one time I really remember was when I finally decided to fire a client of mine, and I say fire in quotes, right? But to stop working with a client of mine because I was doing well. I was making good money, right? I was busy, if that's what you want to call doing well, but I I had work coming in, but I was not happy with the work that was coming in. I always felt like every time I'd get another request from this particular client that it was always, one more thing to add to my list, or I just wrapped up my week and here's another request for, they want me to work on the weekend or something. Yeah. And so it's what we're willing to accept, but also the situation that we tend to keep ourselves in, right? Because I had been working for several years as a freelancer at that point. I didn't really need to work with that particular client anymore, but I had always worked with them since the beginning that I became so busy working with them that I didn't actually diversify my client portfolio very much. And so I sort of felt stuck like that, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't think about it at the time as burnout, but now looking back, I guess it sort of could be related, right? And they always had unreasonable deadlines. I couldn't delegate the work to anybody, obviously, because I was working for them as a freelancer, but I eventually stopped working with them and I took a huge financial hit actually in my business, but I felt better. And I learned how to rebuild my business and diversify without depending on a client that didn't treat me the way that I needed to work and be treated. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's something, maybe even some specific advice, not just for new translators, but also for those who are thinking they're stuck working for the same clients, maybe that don't pay well enough. You know, you're not making enough per hour, so you feel like you have to work all the time around the clock to make the income that you need. That could be forcing you into some burnout, I think. You know, there's a lot of different ways to think about this, so I think that's important. But also, when you're thinking about dealing with burnout, you should think about some things, like you said, not just the why. I mean, the why will get you to some good answers here, right? Why is this? And then keep going further into that. But also, what kind of changes you can make to start, I guess, healing yourself or avoiding it in the future. Because, I mean, what you mentioned, these two specific moments of burnout for you, it's not a one and done fix. You can't rest for a month and go, you know, here I am, I'm back, I'm fine now. No, I mean, this is something that is, you got to kind of constantly keep a pulse on it, right? You have to make sure that you're not falling down that hole again. And so some things to think about where you might want to make some changes are maybe your work-life clarity. If you're interested in this topic about work-life clarity, notice that we don't say work-life balance. You could listen to, I think it was our first episode, right?
Right.
Episode one. Okay. On work-life clarity. So we can link to that in the show notes as well. Just basically what's important to you, both in your personal life and your work life. And when you're doing this, it can be nice to think about what's important to you and what you would strive for. But I think that unless you're willing to do some work to get to that point, it's just a nice to have thought. Like it's just, you know, oh, that's nice on paper. That sounds great, you know. But unless you're willing to actually make steps to move in that direction, it won't mean anything until you do something about it. Also, thinking about what's important for your physical and mental health. For me, this has been a really important lesson, especially this year with my extra volunteer work that I do, is just understanding that I don't need to be constantly available, right? I don't need to be constantly working on certain tasks because there is always more work to do. And I, for sure, physically have noticed an improvement in my health by setting certain boundaries. So I would say that that's really important to pay attention to. And then what, like I'm talking about boundaries, what boundaries do you need to set for yourself and for also others? Something that I have learned with boundary setting in general is that we think our boundaries are for other people, but actually they're for ourselves first.
Yes.
Because we can say, okay, I'm not going to answer client emails after this time. Well, that's fine. But your clients don't necessarily need to know that. You don't have to tell them, I'm not answering your emails after, 5 o'clock or on the weekends or whatever, you know. It's fine if you tell them that, but really that boundary is for yourself first, right? Because if you're not willing to stick to that boundary, then whatever you portray to other people that you are willing to do is what they're going to think is your normal, you know, state of being. Like, oh, this person's just always around, so I can just send them a message any time of day or night and they'll get back to me right away, you know, that type of thing. I use email because I get so many emails, but I mean, this could be for anything, you know, it could be for any kind of situation that you're in where you think you need to set some boundaries. Maybe it has to do with personal boundaries, like letting people know in your household or among your friend circle, like what your working hours are, because as freelancers, a lot of times people just think we're always available to them and that's not necessarily true, but also thinking about, things like the types of clients or professional partnerships you want to have. If you need to pivot in your business, thinking about social interactions, this is something that I didn't actually, let's say, put a lot of time into thinking about in the past. I would just, you know, say, okay, well, as things come up, I will, you know, see if I have time for social interaction or not, you know, kind of a thing. Like if I have, if somebody says, hey, let's get together or let's, you know, talk or whatever, I would just, you know, see if I had time in my schedule. Coming back to my favorite Full Focus Planner, at the beginning of every week, there's actually a section in the Full Focus Planner when you're doing your weekly preview that has to do with self-care. And one of the things that I like that it has in there is related to social interaction. So I always try to put inside my planner that I'm going to get in touch with, you know, certain people. And it sounds a little silly to put it in your planner, I guess, but it's a reminder for me, like, hey, contact, you know, your sister-in-law or contact, you know, this person you haven't talked to in a while, see how they're doing. And it's just a good way to be in touch with people again. You know, it's important to keep those social interactions going because that is part of, as you were saying, becoming burned out is, you know, lacking those social interactions with other people. And then, you know, thinking about your personal and professional commitments, this is something that can get out of balance very, very quickly. Sometimes we get so busy in our professional lives that we let our personal commitments take a back seat. It's very rarely the opposite, I think, where we take, like, we let our personal lives take the front seat for a long time, right? So, and also just, you know, saying yes or no to things in general. There's a popular saying that is, if it's not a hell yes, it's a no. And I find that that's a kind of a funny phrase, but it makes sense. You know, if you're not very excited about doing something and you say yes to it, just because you say yes to everything, because we've all done that, right? You know, you may end up resenting the fact that you said yes, and you'll be upset about the fact that you're putting in time on something you really don't want to be. So yeah, just things like that. And then other changes you might want to make that we haven't talked about today, but you know, you probably know what is or isn't working for you and maybe where you can set some boundaries, make an easy system that will help you to follow those things.
Yeah, it's really important because it's one thing to decide on what changes you want to make. And it's another thing to actually do the work and to put this into practice. And that's where putting systems in place that will help you follow through and stay on track and make it happen. It's really important. I think that especially with you mentioning, you know, feeling that you have to be available and you have to answer emails or whatever it may be, requests, text messages, messages on Slack or any other sort of virtual workspace that you're using. You feel that, especially if you're working on with something you're passionate about, whether it's paid work or a volunteering project or something you're doing with colleagues that, you know, maybe a collaboration or some sort of partnership or something else, like idea you're working on. Sometimes you just get caught up in the moment and you feel like, oh, that's something you really need to answer, or I have this great idea I want to share. And you don't necessarily think of how it may come across, and is it a normal time to be responding to messages? Is it in the middle of the night or like super early in the morning? Well, of course, you could be in different time zones, right? But yeah, it can be really hard to stay on track. And when it comes to making these decisions and putting the systems in place, I think it's natural to have some sort of feeling of guilt or embarrassment that, oh, but I'm not going to be available or I'm not going to answer as quickly as I used to. but it's natural to doubt yourself and wonder what the other people would think. But the key is to remember that you're doing this for yourself and you're doing it for a reason, which is avoiding burnout or preventing burnout. Whoever you think will question or judge your choices, these people are not you and they're not in the thick of it, especially if you are experiencing some symptoms of burnout. So you just need to do what's best for yourself and for your family and your loved ones and your health primarily. Like this is really a health issue, whether it's physical health or mental health. And I think for me, in trying to stay on track, there are two sayings that I try and remember is remember that we are our own worst critics. And also don't take criticism from people you would never go to for advice.
That's so important. That's so true.
Yeah. You know, if you realize that in trying to avoid burnout or overcome burnout, you need to delegate or you need to change direction of your business or you need to dramatically change your business or pivot, that's your choice. We're really our own worst critics. And I think in one of our episodes before, we talked about how, you know, we're very often the most important thing that prevents us from going further or succeeding is our own self-criticism and a fear that others will judge us for the things that we chose to do. But you shouldn't let that fear guide your decisions, especially when we're talking about changes that have to do with your health.
And improving your lifestyle in general.
Exactly. Yeah. And in doing that, you know, another thing that we often don't think about is the people we often feel will judge us or people we think are our role models, we don't know how they're doing. We don't know the systems they have unless we ask questions. And I think in general, whether we're working as employees or freelancers, we don't ask questions enough. We don't ask our colleagues, you know, our freelancer colleagues enough about how they're handling certain things. Like if you have a huge project that someone contacted you about or you want to take upon, whether, you know, as a freelancer or as a volunteer, why not contact your colleagues, maybe even people you don't know, but you know about them handling similar projects in the past or handling them right now and asking them for advice or how do they go about this process? What do they delegate? What do they outsource? What tips they have? I did that in the past year several times, just reaching out to people I didn't know personally, but I knew about them and I knew that they did the work that I had to do either as a volunteer or as a freelancer and asking them for advice. And they were so receptive and so helpful and it just helped me tremendously not do some mistakes and not burn myself out in the process, you know, just for the fear of losing control or feeling like I had to know the answers. And if I don't know the answers, people will judge me for it. But that's not the expectation. The expectation is that you do the job, you do it well, and you survive in the process. You don't burn out in the process, right?
It's true. And I can say that I've done that last year as well, when I was running for the position of president-elect of the American Translators Association. I actually contacted 3 or 4 past presidents to talk to them about the role and what it means and what kind of commitment it is. And, you know, I really respected their views on it and their perspectives on, you know, making sure that you, as they say, pace yourself, because it's a 4-year commitment, right? You're 2 years as president-elect and 2 years as president.
Yeah.
And it's just a ton of work and the number of hours every week that we put in, but it is something that you could become resentful about if you're not very careful. And they were very honest about that. They said, you know, you really have to set some boundaries around things and about, you know, what you're willing to do and what you need to delegate and this. And that's so true. And that's true in any aspect, even as individual freelancers, we think sometimes, well, we can't delegate this. I'm a one person team, you know, but it's all on me, but that's not true. Right. I mean, we could delegate a lot of things if we want to, right?
Yeah,
we could, even if we think, oh, I don't have the money to delegate. I hear that one all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you would really like to make it happen, you will make it happen.
Right.
I'm sure of that. You know, it's just, it is what it is. So another thing to think about is to set your work hours and make time for your personal interests and side projects. And when I say side projects, I mean things that interest you. I don't mean like more work projects, unless there is a work project you're really excited about.
Right.
But, you know, if they're not on your schedule and it's extremely hard to consistently find times for these things, then they may not happen. And so setting your work hours and deciding, okay, this is the amount of time I have to put towards work or volunteer things or, you know, mentoring or whatever it is, and then saying, okay, but this other time is designated for my personal time with my family, with my friends, for things that I like to do around the house or gardening, exercising, whatever it is, those things are valid and those things are important. So yeah, I think that's a really key thing to think about.
Yeah. This is huge, and it's something I'm still working on. I think I've really been down prioritizing it a lot. And I recently realized that I need to really make it a consistent habit to designate time for myself, for either things I enjoy doing or some creative hobbies, or, you know, be it reading or exercising, anything that has to do with my mental or physical health. And unless it's in my calendar, it's probably not going to happen, or at least not consistently like I want it to be, right? So
for sure.
Another important step in dealing or overcoming burnout is to think about tasks that you could outsource or delegate. And we talked about it a little bit before. And they could really be either personal or professional tasks that would free up your time. And again, this is something that may seem counterintuitive, especially if you're like a perfectionist or a type A person, but this is a crucial step away from getting to the burnout phase in the first place, you know, because it's probably, it was either a crucial factor or has contributed to you feeling burnout or getting there, trying to do everything on your own and doing everything yourself. And as I said, you know, it's, you could think, oh, I can't afford it, or I don't make enough, or this is not for me. I'll really do it better myself than explaining it to someone and like worrying that they will not do it properly. As I said, it doesn't have to be all professional related. It just could be things in your personal life that take time away from you where you're not really enjoying doing, and someone could do it better and more efficiently or relieve some pressure for you that you could, you know, find the time and energy for other things. And of course, you can budget for this, or you can find creative ways to afford these things, like exchanging services with someone, or thinking about the ways you will be able to use this free time and this energy, and how much this would be worth for you, right? It could be childcare or help with childcare, right? For me, when I experienced burnout as a freelancer, that was one of the things. Like I tried to do it all. I tried to be a mom and a freelancer and, you know, a wife and a friend and do all of these things and a teacher. And one of the things I had to do was to get a part-time nanny to help me with childcare.
Yeah.
And that was a difficult thing, a difficult decision, but it's something I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's important to accept help. And as somebody who doesn't accept a lot of help in general, I have learned to do that, and it makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So I can say that it is a very good thing. And when you start to accept help on certain things, you realize how good it is for your life.
Right.
And then you start to go, what else can I get help with?
Because you get us all this energy, and you're feeling like a better person, and you know, you have time and energy for all these things that you felt were impossible or you couldn't manage. And suddenly now you can. Yeah.
And we're just not meant to do things alone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not how life is meant to be. So, and then finally, I would say we've sort of hinted at this a lot, but prioritizing rest, taking mandatory breaks and putting it in your calendar. Making sure you're taking a real lunch break. I think that's really important. I spent years where I didn't take a real lunch break. Having a coffee break, if you like coffee or tea or something like that. Scheduling time for vacation. I know a lot of us are not taking vacations right now. Mm. I actually was very excited. This was going to be one of the first years in many, many years that I was going to take absolutely off for 3 weeks.
Wow.
And here we are in the middle of a pandemic, not traveling. So that's actually something I've been thinking about, like, what can I do instead? Because it's not fair that the pandemic has ruined everybody's travel plans, right?
Yeah.
And maybe I could take off a day every month, or like completely off, like a weekday, not a weekend. I'm talking about a weekday. Right. And I would normally be working, or two, you know, that's something to think about. I know that we've heard some great feedback from people who heard our episode with Matt Baird, and they want to work towards a 4-day work week. And actually, one of our Instagram followers told us that she has started trying to do that. And last week was her first week trying to do it. So I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so unlike in an office setting, nobody's going to remind you or encourage you to take a break or to take some time off. So it's on you to do that. And also, I mean, you could get somebody to be sort of an accountability person for you. For some of us, it could be our spouse. It could be a good friend. It could be another colleague. I mean, it's very easy to find another colleague who would be willing to do this with you, I think. So just reach out to somebody and ask them and say, hey, we deserve to make our priorities important as well. So let's keep each other accountable for this. And I think that that's a really important thing to do on a regular basis, because otherwise it's so easy to fall back into the rat race.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. It's a great idea. And, you know, part of the, as we talked before, part of the reason why we may end up in a burnout situation keep working without taking care of ourselves is that we start, losing certain priorities in life, and staying social is part of this too, whether it's with colleagues or family or friends. And this can be combined with, time for rest, like coffee breaks or lunch breaks. You could schedule in-person or virtual lunch breaks or coffee breaks, like we did a couple of times, with like-minded colleagues or family or friends. To get there, just simply, as you said, reach out and share your goals and say, this is what I'm trying to achieve. And, you know, take a break and just have some interaction and vent and talk and have like a lively conversation about something, or discuss a book that you read together, and ask them to help you stay on track, and you would do the same for you. And that's an accountability factor. That's something that can be done either in person or virtually. And it's, again, when work starts to flood in, or if you have like a lot of things on your plate, it's something that's easy to brush off and say, I don't have time for this. Schedule it, put it on your calendar, and realize that it's a priority. Keep yourself accountable, because it's not just staying in touch with people. It's about your mental health as well, and your ability to talk to someone and to vent and to get some energy and share what's going on with you in life, personally or professionally, and stop thinking about work for half an hour or an hour.
Yeah, it'll be there when you get back, I promise. Nice.
Yeah.
So that's it for today's episode. We hope that it's given you some ideas on how to deal with burnout, how to recognize it, and how to overcome it. We'd like to know if you happen to give any of our tips a try, or if you have some smart habits to share on this particular topic. You can send us an email at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com, or you can leave a comment on our website under the show notes for today's episode. And now it's time for a smart habit check-in. Veronica, what habit are you working on right now?
Well, it's interesting because it actually has to do with avoiding burnout.
So does mine.
Right. So for me right now, it's staying offline at specific times during the day. And unfortunately, I don't always do it well on my own. So I need some help from technology to do it consistently. So we recently lost power in our house, or actually our entire neighborhood, for the whole evening. And it was really stressful, but it sort of took me back to simpler times in the past when we didn't have all this technology that we're relying on all the time. And that can be a blessing and a curse. So we couldn't find out what's going on why we lost power. So we had to go outside, and all the neighbors were out, and we all like just frantically ran around and asked each other what's going on, if everyone everyone has lost power, we're just a few houses. And instead of, you know, watching a movie or listening to some music, like we normally do in the evening, we played a board game and read books and we had candles around the house. And it was just so, like, after the initial feeling of panic, there was this sense of calm and relief. Like, there was nowhere to be and there was nothing we could do. Just relax and enjoy the moment. And I really like that. And while I'm generally trying to be mindful of, say, not checking my email all the time or in the evening or reading the news before bedtime, sometimes I slip up and I do that anyway. So I decided to do it consistently so that I get into the habit of staying offline during the time when I should be focusing on myself and my family and rest. So I'm using the downtime function on my iPhone to schedule these offline breaks for myself in the evenings and on weekends. And with this function, you can either schedule periods of downtime at a specific time every day, or you can fully customize it and say it's this time in the on the weekends and it's this time on like work days or whatever. And certain apps will be disabled for you. And I just like getting a notification on my phone that tells me, okay, your downtime starts in so many minutes. And it's my cue that it's time to, like, if I wanted to check my email one more time, I do it now and then that's it, you know?
That's it, yeah.
What habit are you working on?
Well, mine is similar. I mean, I wasn't thinking about it in the sense of today's episode as far as like burnout goes, but I think that it lends itself to the topic. So I'm working on setting boundaries as well around work and making sure that I have something in mind for when I'm not working. So this is something I haven't done before. So yes, I've set boundaries around work before, but I haven't actually thought about, okay, well, what am I going to do later when it's non-work time, meaning like in the evenings or on weekends.
Right.
And for me, that's been important because, like I said many times here, I love to work. So it's important for me to have something different to look forward to so that I don't just slip back into work mode because it's the easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And it also just gives me something to look forward to during the day or during the week. And I know that when I finish working, I have something fun or relaxing planned already, sort of like, oh, at the end of today, I can, you know, read that new book that I picked out, or I can go on a really long walk or on a hike, or, you know, I'll go pick up some new flowers to plant or something like that. Like, I've already got something in mind that I'll be doing later, so I'm not tempted to just continue working. Mm-hmm. And it's made it actually easier to keep the boundaries that I've set. So sort of a new thing, but I think it's working for now.
Yeah.
So, and now let's go into our popular segment, which we know a lot of our listeners enjoy, which is the Book Nook. And for anybody who's new, the Book Nook is where we share a book that we're currently reading or that we recently finished and what we thought about it. So what are you reading right now, Veronica?
So I'm reading a book that I bought a couple of years ago at the Houston Space Center, and it's called An Astronaut's Guide to Life on Earth by Chris Hadfield. He's a Canadian astronaut that participated in, I think, 3 missions to space, and he was on the International Space Station. And on the cover of the book, it says, "What going to space taught me about ingenuity, determination, and being prepared for anything." That's what initially, you know, drew my attention to that book, and I couldn't resist buying it. I just thought it was so interesting, and especially in the light of what's going on this year in the world. And I remember with the recent launch, there was a meme going around like, oh, these astronauts that left Earth, it was just on time. They were like, you know, the lucky ones who could leave this mess and go to space. So I picked up this book, and it's really interesting. It's like sort of, you know, talking about his training and the things he encountered in space and all of the really life and death decisions and situations that he was in, and what it taught him about being creative and not taking anything for granted and being prepared for the worst and managing unexpected situations. It's a really interesting read. It really draws you in from the beginning. Like the first chapter, like the introduction that you start reading, he's talking about his dream of walking out of the airlock into, you know, the open space. And in his head and from all the movies he's seen, it just seemed like it's going to be such a magnificent moment, such a effortless, floating out into space. And the reality was that it's a tiny circular airlock. And he, like, as he was describing, because of the spacesuit and all the equipment he was carrying, he looked like a square, and he had to fit a square into a circle and make it look, in at least like for himself, like elegant and effortless. And of course, it really wasn't. And that's, for me, this was such an interesting parallel to things in life where you think, you look at someone and you think, oh, they've had such an, you know, an easy road in life where they've really had it all given to them and they went from one thing to another, but you don't know what's going on behind the scenes and how difficult it was for them to make things work and do certain things that felt, you know, impossible to achieve. So yeah, it's a really great read. What about you?
Very interesting. Yeah. So I just started reading actually a book that's been on my shelf for a while. It's called Small Fry, a memoir by Lisa Brennan Jobs. And she's actually the daughter of Steve Jobs. So mm-hmm. for anybody who has an Apple device in their house,
wow.
You know, Steve Jobs then. It's actually interesting. I did not realize, I mean, I didn't ever think about it either, but she had such an unstable home life. Mm-hmm. He was not present for her really much at all. So, but she grew up basically with her mother, who it seems that she pretty much had to take care of quite a bit herself. So she's just seemed like a child. I'm just starting it, like I said, but she seemed like a child who was just very mature at a very young age. And it's a beautiful, it's very well written, very, very well written story about her life growing up in Silicon Valley and during the 1980s and 1990s, which anybody who's been around that long or longer, you know, we all remember those times when technology was changing immensely, right? And certain companies like Apple were really becoming what they are, you know, even not, I was going to say what they are today, but not quite. I mean, they were really up and coming, right? And so it's just really well written in the sense that even though her home life was unstable, she had a very strong sense of who she was and her place in the world. And what she describes is the people around her and the life around her and the way that she saw it, not necessarily influenced by what was going on in her life. I mean, she recognized those things, but she didn't necessarily just accept everything as it was. It's just very interesting. It's very, very well written. I would recommend it already, and I haven't even finished it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think this is her first book, I want to say, but she has written for several other publications, and she's a very, very great writer, I think. I think that I would say of the memoirs I've read, this is probably one that I would recommend to a lot of people, whether you're interested in Steve Jobs or not. Like, that's not the point at all. But it's something that I think a lot of us don't realize. You know, I think she made the point that the world knew her father better than she did, or they got to see more of him than she ever did.
Wow.
Yeah, it's powerful, this book. So that's what I'm reading right now. And it's a New York Times bestseller. We can link to that in our show notes for everybody who might be interested, and your book as well, for sure. So, and that's it for this week's episode. We'll be sending our email subscribers a checklist of all the tips and strategies that we mentioned today for dealing with or avoiding or overcoming burnout. And we'll send that out on July 7th. So if you'd like to receive that checklist, go ahead and sign up for our emails on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com. And if you'd like to be notified when our episodes are released, you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to it.
And if you like our podcast, there are a couple of simple ways you can support us. Please share it with your colleagues and friends and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This really takes 1 minute, and we have recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. We'll link to it in our show notes. Our next episode will be released on July 14th. We will welcome a guest that we're very excited about and talk about another topic that is relevant for many people, if not all of us right now. So stay tuned, subscribe to our podcast, and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or sign up for our emails to find out who our next guest will be.
Yes, and we can't wait to share this episode with you. Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered a simple strategy that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover on this podcast, please record a quick voice message and email it to us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd love it if you would leave us a review and please share the podcast with other translators you know.